Welcome to Biz Takeouts, Biz Community's bite-sized business news to go. I'm your host, Rutendo Nyamuda. Coming up on the Takeouts menu, founder of Story Room, Ellen Fishett.
Corporate culture needs to be defined. I think as leaders of businesses and as company owners, you actually have to be very brutally honest with yourself. Some people should not be CEOs. Mm. Some people should not be managers. And not because they're not good people, but maybe communication is not their strength.
It's time for Biz Takeouts.
You are very influential and instrumental in the technology industry in South Africa. And one interesting thing is you've started the Story Room, which is a company that focuses on company culture within companies in the technology industry. Tell us a bit about the Story Room.
In the 14 years I've been operating in the technology sector, so a lot in the startup sector, first for government, then for the Nelson Mandela University, Silicon Cape, and now out on my own. The one thing I noticed with the development of technology that is really good and the mushrooming of all these startups and the opportunity that innovation and technology offers is that human interaction decreased. So although there was growth in terms of, you know, skills and jobs and opportunities, the connection between people decreased and their communication diminished. And with that, that brought along different problems. I realized that something that sort of like evened the playing field was our ability to connect as humans with each other.
I'd like to find out, how would you define corporate culture?
Corporate culture would be the set of rules. Those could be spoken, written rules, but also our terms of engagement, the way we communicate with each other, and the way the company aspires to deliver their product and service to their customers. And corporate culture defines whether, there are open door policies with managers. It defines whether they are very hierarchical. It defines if there's more sort of a relaxed approach. These days you see a lot of arguments around a flexible working space or working remotely. Mm-hmm. And that requires different thinking and a different sense of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. But why is it important that companies define and have a corporate culture? And in addition to that, that they explain that or express that to their employees?
Any decision that we make, whatever it is we choose to do our best in, whatever it is we choose to spend more than 8 hours per day doing, speaks to our values. And if you don't define your values intrinsically, it means you also may not, for example, recruit the right people. Because if you don't know what your culture is and what kind of people you want in them, how are you going to choose the right people? Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, I see with people that are going into the working field or the world of work, and even people that already work for companies, they feel lost. They feel excluded. They feel like what they think or say doesn't matter. A couple of years ago, when I was trying to get corporates to understand this when I was consulting, everyone thought it was something very fluffy. It was a nice to have. It was this, you know, companies used to tell me when I used to pitch up, but how important it was to expand your employee wellness, because they essentially, your employees make your money for you. Mm-hmm. So they can make or break your business. And what you want them ultimately is to be on your side. And I think if I could make the comparison, for example, in families we have disagreements, in relationships we have disagreements, but if our intent is to find a solution together and there is respect for our different thinking and we are willing to take the time to talk about our disagreements or talk about the things that we don't understand, what we often see is that there's mutual intent to solve problems or to find solutions. So corporate culture needs to be defined. You need to, I think as leaders of businesses and as company owners, you actually have to be very brutally honest with yourself. Some people should not be CEOs. Mm. Some people should not be managers. And not because they're not good people, but Maybe communication is not their strength. Maybe also dealing with people doesn't have their particular interest. And I think the more complex our lives become, as we're basically switched on 24 hours a day, the more difficult it is actually to deal with all these ambiguous sentiments or dynamics. Mm-hmm. You know, tech is clear. If you work with an engineer or a developer or even a designer, everything, there are rules for certain actions. There's a thinking and philosophy behind it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing rational about emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And people are filled with emotions. Mm-hmm. You may have 20 years or 15 years experience in coding and you become the company technology officer. You could be the best coder. It does not mean that you should be managing 15 or 20 or 30 or 100 developers, because that has nothing to do with coding.
Mm.
It has everything to do with people, and people are unpredictable.
Wow. I'm interested to know, how do you go about doing the company strategy? What steps do you take? What areas do you consider
mm-hmm.
when you're building a company strategy for corporate culture?
So the first thing, I mean, just very practically, obviously that culture will differ per company. We will look at what their strategy is. So every company has a strategy in terms of their growth, or if they want to move to new markets, or if they want to build new technology products. And I sit with the owners of these strategy portfolios. So I believe it's important that when you're building a corporate culture, that this is not a discussion you have with HR, because people think that human resources department is responsible for the people things. But they're only one unit within the entire community or within the entire company. So if you're going to go about influencing the way people feel at work, the way they execute, the way their sense of accountability or their productivity, you have to have all the different role players, all of the different functions of those entities at the table, because they need to agree. It's like, you know, maybe being a headmistress at school, the principal at school, and you are the only one that is aware of the rules and why the school exists and why you have created these rules and what you aim to achieve at your school. It's not going to work if the rest of your staff don't know. And it's certainly not going to work if the learners or the students don't know. Mm-hmm. And also one of the things I look at is when this strategy is created, who was involved in that process? Because at the various levels you have in a company, and it works both ways, you know, often managers take a lot of a slack or flack, I should say, and then the CEOs, because, you know, they get paid the big bucks and people are resentful because they don't seem to stress. And often the sentiment is, I'm doing your job for you. Because there's such little engagement, what the executors don't always understand is that CEO is responsible for your salary. And that CEO has to make sure, or that sales manager has to make sure, that targets are met. Because if we don't bring in money, we cannot pay salaries.
Mm.
It is as simple as that.
You've just said they're executors,
mm-hmm.
and they're people who kind of create the strategy for it. And sometimes there's that miscommunication.
Yes.
Or where employees say, I'm doing your job.
Yes.
But you're the executor at the end of the day. At different levels, that's also something that companies don't explain.
Yes.
Is what everyone is doing at different levels. Because
yes.
I think once you break that down, you get the sense of, oh, they're the planners. These are the people who do the strategy. They send it on to the next group of people. They send it on to another group of people who execute. And then, yes, you have your interns and everything else. But if you understand how the network and how the corporate works together, as you're saying, as a family, as a unit, you're so much stronger than everyone operating in silos,
yes.
thinking that all you have to do is your job,
yes.
but not understanding the interconnectivity
yes.
between
Correct.
The positions.
Yeah, you, Tina, you actually put that very well. You've really articulated that well. The sense of, for me, it boils down to understanding where you what your piece is in the puzzle.
Mm.
And how and why you fit in.
Mm.
And so, yes, that could be the CEO that maybe, you know, if it's whatever the puzzle, that is probably the thinking that we have is that that's the top piece of the puzzle. And I may be a general assistant, or I could be the receptionist. So that means, you know, I'm answering the phones, I'm taking messages, I'm having to do all sorts of administrative and support clients and the employees and the executive management. If you don't understand why, as far as I'm concerned, the general assistant and the receptionist are the two most important people in a company, because A, they are, the receptionist is the interface. Mm-hmm. So that's the first person a potential client experiences when they walk into your building, and that will define how they experience and perceive. That's their first impression that they get. The second part is your general assistant. People tend to think that that person is not important, and unfortunately often, and general assistants also feel, they'll say to you, I'm just here to clean. And I say, well, if we did not have you, our place would be in a mess. And no one wants to work in a messy environment. And no one wants to buy products in a dirty or unkept environment. So essentially, if you don't have your ducks in a row whereby it's a pleasure to walk into the company, and the receptionist understands that her attitude and her behavior determines, practically almost determines, whether you decide you want to continue this conversation or not. I don't know how many times, you know, you've been to an office or a bank and you just feel like someone is not, it's not very friendly, or they seem to feel like, they seem to have objected that you were there, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get that feeling. Yeah. And that really, it influences our moods as to how we continue our business with that company or organization. Not only do I think in today's world, I think if you look at the level of graduates that choose not to go into jobs for the simple reason that they feel that they want to have more to say, they want to understand what impact this company has on other matters than share, pure shareholding and profit for shareholders. And I sound a bit like of an anarchist when I say this, but it is really my experience. The world is moving away from mass manufacturing and universal thinking. People are already conscious of the fact, not only that they are unique, but that they wish to operate in environments where that is recognized.
I love what you said about the graduates coming in and seeking more than just a job and yes. a paycheck. Because I was recently in a conversation with a friend who said she loves her job. She was just like, Pretendo, I absolutely love my job. And I hadn't heard someone say that for the longest time. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, there's always something. It's yes. either your boss or your colleagues or the environment. There is always something someone complains about. And she said, you know, the thing about the company she works for is they look after her holistically.
Yes.
There is a growth plan for her within the company. They are very big on wellness. So they're a company with a, I think it's a Kauai downstairs. She gets her smoothies. They've got a gym within the office. And fine, yes, they have the funds to do all of this and create this environment. But I think even smaller companies, even startups, yes. it's, what are you doing to appreciate your staff?
Yes.
You spoke about those leave days. Do you occasionally say to them, our culture here is that you can work from home if you want to. If you are sick, this is another thing. I know so many people who are afraid to take sick leave, or who take sick leave but still work from home because they're afraid of what their boss is going to say if they don't turn in the report.
Yes.
There is this fear culture that I think we are on the bridge that we kind of need to break.
We definitely need to break that, because if you look at just how the world is functioning in general, I mean, there are a lot of institutions and institutionalized thinking that is falling, mm-hmm. you know? So, and I think that has hugely to do with inequalities in the world. And I sound like I'm preaching, but I think when you build culture, that it is not only for when you are big. When you are spending an average of at least 8 hours a day somewhere, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to try and drive against the will of the people. And I understand that it's more that we need to have rules, and there needs to be a certain framework of in which we operate. That makes absolute sense. Otherwise, you get chaos. But I think that you could engage your staff in having that conversation, mm-hmm. because my experience is that once people understand why they are where they are, once they understand that I am seen as a unique individual person, and I am heard and I am recognized, and it is important for my employer that I am well. And if we can build cultures where there's reciprocity within organizations and not only transactional from a perspective of you sit in this room for 8 hours and then I will pay you, but as you say, I want you to thrive, I want you to grow within this environment, it will be, most companies find then that they don't have to ask their staff to work overtime because that is a natural give back when you feel that this company takes care of me. I'm a happy person. This is a good environment to be in. And it's really in small things. I actually just want to come back to the fact so for the companies who can't afford the gyms and free lunches for their staff, you'd be amazed how many people don't greet their employees. It always boggles my mind. I always wonder how you expect to get the best out of someone, yet you walk into the office in the morning and you don't greet them.
You've spoken about strategy at length, and sometimes companies can have the strategy. They've got these long documents, yes. Welcome packs, this is who we are, this is what we do, it's the vision, mission, the purpose. You've got everything to a T. But then there's bridging the gap between strategy and implementation. What steps does one take to bridge that gap?
So, Ritinda, I would say the first step that you need to take is to make your strategy clear and to share that with everyone that is involved. It always boggles my mind that you have senior management that go off on a strategy session, you know, which the employees complain about as well. They're off there in their secret worlds thinking of plans. And it's usually negative if they don't have a good relationship, or if senior executive managers very far off from their staff, then there is this sort of like mistrust or maybe paranoid. When that's not the case, because usually the executive staff is just trying to keep the shareholders happy and to ensure that there's more sales and therefore that people, you know, jobs can be retained. But you don't know that if you don't speak to each other. And executive staff may also not know why they are mistrusted. And they're human. They don't like feeling mistrusted. It's not nice being in an environment where people look at you and you know you're not wanted. So executives actually don't feel any different than the employees that are enforced with these rules. When I say, so how do you implement strategy? The first thing you do is you share it. I like to make the analogy that strategy is your plan. It's your language that you speak. It's the dream that you have. And then you go into implementation and execution to get to that vision, that plan.
Would you mind giving us some examples of companies that are getting the concept of corporate culture correct?
Ritinda, where I see companies getting it right is where company strategy is not only an HR issue. It's where the entire management team takes responsibility at different levels and from different perspectives for the well-being of their employees.
And so, Ellen, as a final question, for companies or corporates, individuals, people with startups who are listening to this podcast, what advice do you have for them today?
Very basic steps that startups or companies can take to understand and to build on their corporate culture would actually, the first step is to ask your people if they are happy and what they are happy about. If they understand their purpose and if they understand where they are going, that's a tricky exercise to do because you risk hearing a lot of negative things about your company or the way you lead, and that's painful. So it's only when you understand the complexity of the wound that you can actually heal it. So the most simplest way of building a corporate culture would be to start with a conversation about where you are and about where you want to be, and to make sure that everyone that does not look or sound or does that what you do is sitting at that table to participate in that conversation.
And that's a wrap on today's show. Biz Takeouts. Take it when you like it, where you like it, how you like it.